Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And before we talk about baseball, I want to say happy birthday to my youngest sister, Amelia Lincoln, who came through a scary confrontation with leukemia to continue to be the best aunt ever. If you happen to see her in Vermont, please wish her a happy birthday. And always know this, today will be better than yesterday. What a crazy day of baseball. What a day for the Atlanta Braves facing the Marlins. The Braves scored 11 runs in the second inning and added 11 more over the next three innings, including this from Ronald Acuña Jr.
Swing and a drive to deep center. Marte didn't even make a move. That ball is way out of here into the tunnel and may have just bounced all the way out of the ballpark. Three-run homer for Acuña. 22-8, Atlanta.
As crazy as that number sounded from Joe Simpson on 680 The Fan, well, the numbers got even more crooked.
Fly ball sent to right center field and pretty deep. Looking up over there is Alfaro. He'll have to play it off the wall. Two runs are going to score. The throw gets away. Coming home to score is Inciarte. A new Braves franchise record. It is 25-8.
And the Braves weren't done. Loading the bases in the bottom of the eighth inning for Adam Duvall.
1-0-2 Duvall, high fly ball to left field. Oh. We are witnessing something truly historic.
Wow.
A grand slam by Adam Duvall. And it's now 29-9. And a three home run game for the second time in a week for Adam Duvall.
Unbelievable. Yes, the Atlanta Braves scored 29 runs, their most since 1883 when they were the Boston Bean Eaters. And tied for the second most by any team in baseball's modern era since 1900. Of course, you had that crazy 30-3 game more than a decade ago between the Baltimore Orioles and the Texas Rangers. So the news for the Braves in this game was great. And before the game, even better news. They activated second baseman Ozzie Albies from the injured list. He missed over a month because of a wrist injury. The Mets, the Orioles, both of these teams trying to fight their way into the playoff picture. And in the top of the sixth inning, the Orioles were leading 6-5 when this happened.
Now the pitch to Ruiz. Swinging a drive well hit to right. Conforto going back, way back, way back. Reaches, and he made the catch! He made the catch over his shoulder and runs softly into the fence to the right of the 370 mark. One of the defensive plays of the year from the New York Mets. Michael Conforto just saved three runs. He had his back to the infield. He extended as far as he could. The ball snow-coned a bit. He secured it in his glove, and you'll be seeing that one all year because Michael Conforto might have just saved not only the Mets' game, but if they go anywhere this year, their season. That catch was that big.
Howie Rose with that great call on WCBS. And Taylor, you're an Orioles fan. In that moment, first off, I wanted to get your reaction when he made the catch. And can you separate yourself emotionally to talk about how great that catch was?
Oh, of course. I mean, it was phenomenal and great call by Howie Rose there. It was amazing. It was an amazing catch, threatening to blow the game wide open. It would have been awesome to take a second game from the Mets rolling into this Yankee series. But alas, it was not meant to be. But not just because of Michael Conforto.
First pitch, and Pete hits it high in the air to right center. It's deep. Mullins going back at the track, at the wall. He climbs the wall. Doesn't matter. It's gone. Home run, Pete Alonso. And the Mets have taken a 7-6 lead.
And that would be the final score. And today, the Orioles start a four-game series with the Yankees. Taylor, are you kind of juiced about that?
Oh, yeah, man. I got my O's cap on this morning. I'll be watching. It might even take priority over the NFL game tonight. I'm excited for football, but I have not been excited about the Orioles or baseball like this in a long time. So big weekend. Let's go.
The Pirates don the number 21 to honor Roberto Clemente. In the game, however, it was a tough night for the Pirates.
So Brubaker's first pitch, a high fly ball to deep left field. Could this be a two-homer night for McCann? It is. One of the deepest parts of the ballpark. Into left center field. James McCann, a two-run shot. White Sox up 7-0 here in the sixth.
and they would go on and win 8-1. That call from WGN. Remember that Sunday when the Athletics' Ramon Laureano was involved in a brawl with Houston? Well, he got the best kind of revenge last night.
Driven left center field. Nobody's going to get it. And that's the ball game as LaStella rounds third and heads home. And Ramon Laureano against his former team walks it off. And the A's have taken three of the first four games from the Astros.
The Cubs, the Reds, Trevor Bauer versus Yu Darvish, two guys who are going for the National League Cy Young Award. And in the top of the first inning, Mike Moustakas jump-started Cincinnati.
Darvish is ready. Now he's home. The pitch to Moustakas is swatted to right field. Hit well. Backing up Hayward. He turns and looks, and that is gone. A three-run home run for Mike Moustakas. That's the most runs that Yu Darvish has allowed since his first start of the year. And Moustakas just smoked that thing out of here to right center.
That from 700 WLW. That was the only scoring in the game because Trevor Bauer was ridiculous. 7 2/3 innings, no runs allowed, 10 strikeouts. Also was going back and forth between the Cubs. We'll be talking with Carl Ravitch about that coming up. The Yankees, of course, have been slumping, and it felt like that above all else, they really needed some kind of a breakout from Gleyber Torres, and boy, he delivered last night.
2-2. High fly ball, deep left center. There it goes. See ya. A long home run off the bat of Torres, and the Yankees have a 1-0 lead. Hit sharply and inside third and down the left field line. Voit rounds third. He will score. Hicks rounds third. He's going to score. It's a two-run double for Torres, and the Yankees lead 5-2.
That, of course, the voice of the Yankees, Michael Kay on the YES Network. We're going to be talking with him in just a few minutes about this upcoming Baltimore series and some big picture decisions that are facing the Yankees in the next couple of years. Davey Garcia, by the way, pitched great for the Yankees last night, getting his first major league win while throwing seven innings. And lastly, entertainer Justin Timberlake has joined an investment group working toward bringing a Major League Baseball franchise to Nashville, Tennessee. This was reported by the Tennessean on Wednesday. Music City Baseball, a collective of business and civic leaders as well as entertainers that has an impressive roster already, jumped at the opportunity to add another marquee name. I'm biased because I lived in Nashville for 8 years. I think it would be a great idea for that city to get a major league team. Now, before we get to Ravi and to Michael Kay, the College Football Podcast with Herbie, Pollock, and Nagandi is back on Mondays and Thursdays. This college football season looks a little different, but Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Nagandi will be with you twice a week throughout the entire season. And after many months of not mentioning much of anything on the football field, this week the guys are previewing the Big 12 and the ACC. They also gave listeners a behind-the-scenes look at Herbie's passionate plea for racial equality in America on College Game Day. It was a very emotional moment on the show, so it was pretty interesting to hear how it all came together. Listen to the College Football Podcast with Herbie, Pollock, and Nagandi, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
Rabbit, where's the Rabbit Train going this morning?
Rabbit Train needs the extra headlights. It's driving through fog right now, heading down towards the Connecticut shoreline area. I have a little golf outing down there. We got a little rain. We got some fog. It's kind of like, you know, Scotland conditions. So the Rabbit Train is moving due south as we speak.
Yeah, and I bet you the Marlins are probably right behind you trying to escape the carnage that they experienced last night. I fell asleep and I woke up and I just couldn't believe the box score when I saw it. 29-9. The Braves put up that many runs. I guess, you know, if you lose Max Fried, if your rotation's a mess, that's a pretty good formula.
You got to score a lot of runs, and it immediately conjured up the memory of the 30-run outburst and Tim Kirkstein's voice cracking when we were at Little League World Series with the Orioles years ago. Look, I do think, and we saw 19 runs by the Brewers, you know, you're going to run into some of these games and some of these nights when you have exhausted staffs and everybody's playing multiple games or seven-inning doubleheaders. You're due for something like that. And look, it's a really good offense, and what Adam Duvall has done here twice with the three homer games is, you know, unprecedented in Brave history. And you think about the great hitters the Braves have had, Adam Duvall's name would not have been at the top of the list when you ask who's going to have multiple three home run games in a season, let alone in a career. So I you know, it's those are aberrational, kind of fun to see every now and then. 4 hours and 14 minutes of 29 runs, I think once in a while is fine.
I love looking at box scores after these games. You know, Ronald Acuna Jr., the leadoff hitter for the Braves, three hits, three walks, four runs scored, five RBI. Freddie Freeman, six RBI, three hits. You go down the list, Dansby Swanson scored five runs. Austin Riley, five runs. Duvall batting in the seventh spot. You mentioned, you know, three homers, nine RBI. He scored five runs. And on the other side, Yamamoto for the Marlins, 2 2/3 innings, 11 hits, 12 earned runs. Forget the ERA. It'll never recover, Carl. And it's funny you mentioned Tim's. It's funny you mentioned Tim's, you know, that his response to that 30-3 game years ago. Taylor actually put it in the rundown today. It's supposed to be lower. But, Taylor, if you get a chance, can you play that now since Carl has referenced it?
Tell us what 30 runs in a single game means.
Well, you know, Ravi, we talk all the time that every night we go to a major league game, we might see something we've never seen before. And no one's ever seen this. This is 110 years since anybody scored 30 runs in a major league game. The Devil Rays didn't score 30 runs in their last 11 games combined. And the Rangers scored more runs in the last two innings of that game than they had scored in their previous six games combined. I mean, this is absurd. Michael Young, the number three hitter on this team, did not drive in a run in a game in which his team scored 30 runs, and yet the last two guys of the order drove in seven runs each. I promise you, in the history of baseball, it's never happened where the 8 and 9 guys drove in seven runs each in a game. The 7, 8, 9 guys went 13 for 19 with 16 RBIs. What are you kidding me?
I think, Carl, I think Tim, happened is that really Scott Van Pelt probably watched that and realized that if you just get Tim to crack his voice, then it becomes wildly entertaining on SportsCenter late at night.
Look, we thought, because we were in Williamsport, we thought maybe we had a bad connection. We realized then it was just Tim's voice cracking. That was the only part of the connection that was a little different.
Man, unbelievable. All right, we got this Bleacher
it was
tweet.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it absolutely was. We got this Bleacher tweet from Peter Gammons' niece, Debbie Gammons Brown. She asked, because I've been complaining about the parade of relief pitchers and the how starting pitchers are losing their preeminence. And so I think in response to that, she asked, what, if any, have been positive changes to baseball as a result of playing through a pandemic? And I don't think I can underscore this enough, and I think you're going to agree with me. Man, the players and the staffers and the athletic staff, you know, trainers, they deserve so much credit for how they've handled this. Yes, we've had some outbreaks and some difficult situations. And, you know, the other day in an article in the Washington Post, Sean Doolittle talked about, you know, the potentially the emotional impact of all this and how there might be some players who need some counseling. But these guys have worked their butts off to make this work. And that, to me, is one of the most positive changes.
Without question. The entire effort is monumental. I was thinking about that today. The ability to be where we're at, the ability to deal with things that, I don't know, you tell me. I sit there and occasionally we'll watch the news, and it's actually the commercials within the news, Buster, that you realize every single aspect of our daily lives are now comprised of figuring out ways to make things work. And that type of Herculean effort, given the numbers that are involved in all of this, I'm amazed. There are so many obstacles against teams, individuals, the sport, to get to where we're at. And this is ending. I don't mean the pandemic. I mean the season is ending with regards to a World Series. That's going to happen. In a lot of ways, it's mind-blowing when you step back.
And I do like some of the changes that they've explored this year. The universal DH we knew was coming. You know, the fact that they're truncating games and extra innings. And I absolutely believe there's going to be a time when we're going to see seven-inning games in some form, whether it's just part of doubleheaders or potentially regular season.
Nope. Of course, there's no question. It's hilarious. So, to share, Mark and I are sitting in the studio on Sunday, and you know, I think we all know Mark. He's a guy who respects history. He's rooted in discipline. And I said, "What do you think about seven inning doubleheaders? Don't mind him. I don't mind him at all. I have yet to." And I know that people that listen to this will raise their hand and say, well, I'm one of them, but I have yet to encounter a player, ex-player, or manager who has said, I don't like them. And I can't believe that Major League Baseball is going to look at these and say, yeah, we tried it for a year. It was only because of the pandemic, and we're done with it. Look, the runner on second base. I think it's here to stay. Again, I think it was Joel Sherman who I, you know, read and have great respect for. This idea of urgency, which in Rob Manfred's eyes and many other people's eyes, I have beaten that drum to a point where no one wants to hear it anymore. But that's what this game has got to continue to do, create urgency. Seven-inning doubleheaders create urgency. They create excitement. Runner on second, extra innings. It creates urgency. There's action. Things happen. I don't think it would be wise to get rid of either one of those things at all.
I'm curious about what you feel about what might be Trevor Bauer's vision for baseball moving forward. I was thinking about this after his game last night. He had a great pitching showdown with someone he has great respect for, Yu Darvish. The Reds get a 3-0 lead, and Bauer after that was dominant. 7 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 10 strikeouts. But there was the back and forth between Trevor and the Cubs throughout the game. You know, he's talking to them. He's giving them side glance. After the game, when he spoke with reporters, he said the Cubs usually give up talking when they are down, but they kept at it last night. His quote was, "It was impressive that you can chirp at someone after they shoved it up your rear end for 7 2/3 innings." I cleaned up that quote a little bit. And I thought about that too, Carl, afterward, because you know, Trevor is not a universally liked guy in baseball. But I think he kind of looks at this as entertainment, and it's like a World Wrestling Federation. And hey, well, you know, talk it up. And I'll send out tweets about the Astros, and we'll go back and forth. And sometimes players will go back at me, and that's fine. You know, he certainly would be at the forefront if baseball begins to really shift in that direction.
Look, Bauer is a great pitcher. He is the Dennis Rodman of baseball. He is the guy you want on your team, and you don't like him when he's not on your team. He encourages the chirping as much as the Cubs, you know, according to Bauer, chirp when they're ahead. They're not, you know, look, the answer to that is pretty simple. They're not chirping because he shoved it up their rear ends. They're chirping because of who he is. Whether he's having a good game or bad game, it's Trevor Bauer that's the root cause of the chirping, not his performance. So for him to correlate, I just jammed it for 7 2/3, and yet they're still chirping. It wouldn't matter if he gave up 11 homers or he did what he did. They're chirping at him, not the result. Look, I have zero problem. The other positive to me about Bauer, he doesn't throw at people. He's usually not involved in any, wow, he threw at my head. He just elicits that emotional, visceral reaction. And yeah, I don't think there's any problem with that. I think anybody that's competed loves to have somebody that you love to hate, that you can focus your attention on. He's that guy, and he currently is pitching at a level which probably irritates those who don't like him even more.
And last night during the course of that outing, at one point he threw 12 straight curveballs, which It's such an in-your-face type, you know, decision. Like, I'm going to throw a curveball, and you know it's coming, and there's nothing that you can do about it because I'm that good. One thing about him that I'm really curious about, Carl, going into the offseason, he in the past has said he's going to go 1 year at a time his whole career because he wants to max out on value. I'm not close with Trevor, you know, barely know him. If I were good friends with him, I'd say, Trevor, you might want to reconsider that thought, because there's going to be a team this offseason that's going to be willing to give him a lot of money for a lot of years. And under the current circumstances, I'd seriously consider taking that if I were Trevor. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, until you walk on anybody's shoes, I think we were sort of critical of Max Scherzer a few years back when he kind of bet on himself, and that paid off really well. This is all about the individual. If Trevor Bauer believes that there's a higher level in him beyond what a one-year deal would bring, meaning, look, in 2 years I'm going to be better than I am now, then I think he's probably going to take a one-year deal. I agree with you. There are going to be teams, and there should be, who offer him 2 or 3 years. I don't think he's in line for a 6-year deal. I would never do that as an owner. But if I can turn 1 year into 2 or 3, and that placates Trevor Bauer's desires, then I would do that. And I do think I'm sure there's a number that would get him off the I want to do 1 year deals. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure there's a number. And yeah, I think, but again, until you walk in someone's shoes, it's impossible to speculate on their reaction to money and then the other things that go into decisions like that. Organization, city living, et cetera, et cetera.
The most fascinating race, I don't think there's any doubt, the American League Central, because you have three really good teams. The Minnesota Twins last year won 101 games, led the majors in the home runs, and you had the Cleveland Indians with the best pitcher in the American League, Shane Bieber, at the front of the rotation. You have the up-and-coming White Sox, who are sort of reprising what the Cubs did in 2015, arriving a year early. What do you see in that race?
Well, I just think it's really interesting. The idea that Dylan Cease is pitching well, that Giolito, you know, had his game. Keuchel is a veteran there. You hope that little lower back thing is not something that's going to rear its head again. I don't know. To me, it's the best lineup in the American League Central, and they're beginning to get really good pitching. Dane Dunning has been really good. He finally got a win last night. The fact that they're in first place, and to me, all three of those teams are going to get into the playoffs. I just think that this season, and the White Sox and the Padres, Miami playing well, they're sort of the highlight teams. But boy, you know, given where the Yankees are, you tell me the best team in the American League now that's not named the White Sox. I'm putting the White Sox right up there with the Rays. I think that they are on that level. And given where the Yankees are, those teams league. And to me, it feels like you know, you get Kopech back next year, the White Sox are in a position to be really good for a really long time. And the fact that they overtook first place here, to me, they were just, they're a worthy topic to talk about. James McCann hits two home runs. That's the day after Grandal makes a bonehead play, or he blows a play. He comes in, hits two homers. They're just deep. They're talented. They're young. And I have them as the best team in the American League right now, along with the Rays.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of teams, after the success of the Astros and the Cubs, with those two teams tanking, you know, in the early 10s, a lot of teams began to embrace that formula. And a lot of teams, it didn't work for a lot of teams, most notably the Philadelphia Phillies. For the Chicago White Sox, it absolutely has paid off. Like, they've invested in the right players. Yeah. They made the right deals. They picked the right guys. And they, like the Astros, are positioned going forward to have a really long window potentially for success. Now, I will ask you, it's funny you framed it that way. I did a SportsCenter hit the other day, and they said, okay, can you give us, now that the Yankees are sort of down and out and trying to find some traction, who were the best teams in the American League? And I said, well, do you want me to like frame it as the team most likely to win the World Series or the best overall team? And they said the World Series. I picked Cleveland for the World Series, having heard general managers say, man, in a short series, you don't want to deal with that monster, referring to Shane Bieber.
I would agree. We just did the game with Bieber. Was great for three, four innings, and got into the fifth inning, and all of a sudden something changed. Something happened. Couldn't tell you exactly what, but it was different Bieber. He came out of the game. And maybe I'm going off last impression being the impression, but he faded. And this is the dude that's having the greatest year, you know, of all time. And we're all witness to that and understand all that. But it was definitely kind of a different season that he had, a different game, excuse me, relative to his season. And maybe that's what I'm leaning on for. Wow, that was just odd watching him in that game, because beyond that, as good as McKenzie's been since he showed up, I just don't have them with the depth. I think that's what impressed me about the White Sox, was their depth here recently and their good pitching. And to me, that's sort of the difference.
Last one, we got word that Justin Timberlake has joined the Nashville expansion efforts. Carl, I'm curious about how this plays out, because my sense has been for the last 15 years that Major League Baseball wanted to take care of the ballpark situations in Tampa Bay and Oakland before they got to expansion. Do you think it's possible that, given the revenue losses for 2020, that maybe expansion talk for cities like Nashville are going to be accelerated, A? And what do you think of Nashville as a potential expansion city? I'm biased, and I almost need to recuse myself from the conversation, having lived there for 8 years.
Right. I love it. I love it. I love the idea that a city that's as young and vibrant as it is, I think Charlotte and others will argue that we deserve attention. But if there's money there, it's a absolutely viable market. It's a wonderful place to play and a wonderful, you know, wonderful city to play in. I know you have bias. I'll be honest, I do too. And I think Charlotte is a legitimate option as well. But so you get Timberlake involved, you get those names involved. We just saw it obviously in New York with Alex and Jennifer. That those are the things that will help the sport, to have that infusion of people from outside the game who resonate with a fan base that is younger than the one that we're currently appealing to in masses.
Yeah, and I bet that their current major league owners who would love to take their franchises to Nashville. That's how attractive it is. All right, Carl, thanks for doing this.
You got it. Thanks, Buster.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code
baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Michael Kay is the play-by-play man for the Yankees on the YES Network. And Michael, before we get to the plight of the Yankees, I got to ask you about something that happened between you and I when I did a Sunday night baseball game. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm in the middle of a Sunday night baseball broadcast, and I get a text message from Michael, who noticed on our broadcast that I was sitting in his seat, and he was somewhat perturbed because he had been told that when he wasn't there, no one else would touch it, and I was totally sullying it in the year of the coronavirus. And I know you well enough to know that part of you, while you were sort of joking about it, part of you was kind of irked.
Kidding on the square is what John Sterling used to like to call it. So I was always told that the only people in that booth were going to be me and the stage manager during the YES broadcast. But rest assured, Buster, after I saw you squatting in there, the next day I had disinfectant wipes, everything. So every aspect of Buster was cleaned out of there.
Yep. Hazmat suits, I'm sure, were involved at some point. 4 or 5 hours of work. I fully expected that. It had to be Gleyber Torres, right, who stepped up for the Yankees last night. It felt like he was the guy that they had to have because Gary Sanchez looks completely lost.
Well, their best players have to start playing better. I mean, yeah, you'd like to wait for Judge and Stanton to get back. You don't know when that's going to be. So whatever's left over, they have to step up and do their job. Gleyber Torres, before yesterday, Buster, in about 80 at-bats, I'm rounding off, has 6 RBIs. That's not good enough. So they need him to be the superstar that he is in order for them to, A, just even make the playoffs.
What I've heard is that when they started the summer camp, he basically was not in shape. That during the shutdown, he had put on some weight and he wasn't in a good place. And so I wanted to get your perspective on him and on Gary Sanchez.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to whether or not he was in shape. To tell you the truth, I mean, we don't even have any access to anybody. So it's hard. From the naked eye, he didn't look like he was overweight. You know, they were just playing the Blue Jays, and I was talking with people there, and Guerrero, you know, actually went through the same thing, and he actually looks a little bit overweight. But, I can't give an excuse for why Gleyber Torres has played this way. It's odd. Maybe the position switch, although he did play a lot of shortstop last year. He looks a little unsure in the field. Sometimes that you bring that to the offensive side. Again, can't make excuses for the guy. As for Gary Sanchez, I have never seen a guy who you would have to say would be a superstar level player drop to this level. He looks completely lost at the plate. I was talking to somebody in baseball 2 days ago, and they compared him to Chris Davis. That's how lost he looks. So the Yankees are certainly not hoping it's that. I mean, I have a lot of theories on what it could be with Sanchez, and one of them is the Yankees are so obsessed with tightening him up with framing that they heard a guy named Tanner Swanson make him lower in his crouch, put his knee on the ground, and maybe, you know, it's just information overload. I'm not quite sure, but I've never seen a guy who is such a proficient offensive weapon be a complete non-factor. I mean, Buster, a complete non-factor. There was a point a week ago where he struck out 7 times in a row. He's either too quick on a curveball or he's much too late on a fastball. We have a stat on the YES Network. In the first 4 or 5 years of his career, on something that's called a middle pitch, which we would call a meatball, he hit 375. Those were the pitches that he just destroyed, fastballs. This year, on middle pitches, he has not gotten one base hit. So in the big leagues, if you can't hit a fastball, Buster, you're in a lot of trouble.
I heard you speak very passionately about this on your radio show at 98.7 the other day about, I get the sense you feel like that, you know, it's great. The Yankees are like a lot of teams in on analytics, but it sounds like you feel like they take it too far.
I think everybody takes it too far. And frankly, I think it's ruining the enjoyment of the game. So the people that deal with the analytics have come up with, this is the best way to win. Let's do launch angle. Home runs are what counts. We're not going to bunt. We're not going to run. Strikeouts don't matter. I'm telling you, Buster, the product is not entertaining. Sitting there waiting for a home run and watching strikeouts and walks is just not entertaining. So what baseball should do is find even smarter people to come up with another way to skin a cat, because this is ridiculous the way the game is played right now. As for the Yankees, I mean, they analyze to the nth degree. They're in the middle of a tailspin that incomprehensibly is taking them out of a playoff spot. And they're resting DJ LeMahieu because that's his day to rest.
And then they're resting Gleyber Torres the day after they take him off the IL because that was part of the plan. I'm sorry. Some of the plans have to go out of the window. Some of the computer readouts have to go out the window. On a 60-game season, guys like Kevin Biggio and Vlad Guerrero Jr., they're playing every single game. I don't think it's asking that much for 23-year-old named Gleyber Torres to play every game when he's not on the IL. But they have other ideas, and they stick to it. And I give them credit. You know, they kind of rebooted this organization in a hurry without taking a big fall. But they haven't won anything either, so I think there's got to be a happy medium for all of baseball. It can't just be the machines running the sport.
That felt like a big win for them last night. What's your read on where the Yankees are and where they're going from here?
Well, I think they're going to make it, Buster, because I just think they're better than the teams that are chasing them. They're better than the Orioles, they're better than the Tigers, and they're better than the Seattle Mariners. That being said, the series that starts today, four games at Yankee Stadium against the Orioles, that will tell a lot. You know, if the Orioles come in here and take three out of four, then that changes the whole dynamic. The Yankee schedule, when you looked at it, when it was put out, it looked like September was going to be easy. The 10 games against Toronto, those aren't easy anymore because Toronto's pretty decent. The games against the Orioles look like walkovers because the Yankees always beat the Orioles, and then the Orioles ended up taking three out of four last weekend at Camden Yards. And then you got the last three games of the season against the Miami Marlins, and that could be the difference between the Marlins making the playoffs or not. And if you want to have real easy games, they have three games at the Red Sox, who they're 7-0 against. But you would also have to say, how much would the Red Sox salvage their awful season if they could knock the Yankees out of the playoffs? So I don't think it's a gimme, but if somebody said you have to bet your life savings on it, I'd say the Yankees are going to make the playoffs.
So some of my most enjoyable conversations with you are about the big picture with the Yankees. And I think you would agree with me, the big picture of being a baseball team in New York is going to change dramatically. Assuming that Steve Cohen's purchase of the Mets goes through, he's going to become the richest owner in baseball. And I began to think in recent days about how that is going to frame some of the Yankees' upcoming decisions, which were already getting more complicated by circumstances, even more difficult. For example, as we sit here today, I think our view on whether or not the Yankees are going to give Aaron Judge a big contract has changed because of the fact he's having a hard time staying on the field. And I wonder if it's changed dramatically with Gary Sanchez. I was talking with an evaluator the other day who said, look, you know, you got the best catcher in baseball who's going to hit the free agent market this fall in JT Realmuto, and that would be a very different look for the Yankees. Not only would they have a guy who's a better athlete than Gary Sanchez, but he's certainly better defensively. And I think everybody in baseball assumes that when Francisco Lindor hits the free agent market after the 2021 season, the Yankees could be heavily involved in that bidding. But with a new Mets owner, all of a sudden, they may be going toe-to-toe for the first time, you know, in decades. What's your take on what's ahead for the Yankees with some of those big-picture decisions, given what's going on with the Mets?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what they're going to do. You've heard the same things that I've heard. They love Sanchez, but I don't know if they've fallen out of love over the last half of last year and what he's done this year. It'd be an awful lot to commit an awful lot of money in years to the guy. And although I think that when he's healthy, Aaron Judge is one of the top three or five best players in baseball. Can you, with a good conscience, extend him 5 or 7 years? I don't know. But if they get word that the Mets would lurk on those guys, I think the Yankees' greatest fear with Gary Sanchez is giving up on him and then somebody unlocks the key and he becomes the player that they always thought he was going to be. And with Judge, you know, if they let him go somewhere else, and then he does stay healthy, it would be a colossal mistake because he's such a great player. I'm glad that I don't have to make those decisions. That's made above my pay grade. That's a tough call for Brian Cashman and for Hal Steinbrenner because those were the windows to this championship streak that they were going to, you know, embark on. And if those two guys don't end up being part of the future, then what do they do? How do they reconfigure the team? As for Steve Cohen, you know, a lot of people think he might not be approved because of the $1.8 billion fine that his company paid, but I don't think it's that at all. I think if the other owners get spooked about the fact that this is a guy who could come in without blinking and have a $350 million payroll, they might have not approved him for that reason. I think that's one of the reasons they never wanted Mark Cuban in their club either. So I've talked to some baseball people, and they say that Cohen is very responsible and that he would stay within the confines of a of what, you know, most teams are doing, the highest rated teams, but that would still put the Mets in a different position than they've been over the last 20 years. The Wilpons never played ball in the Yankee arena and in the Red Sox and the Dodgers arena. But if they just get up to that point, it becomes much more interesting in New York, and also might have an effect on the decisions that the Yankees make.
And that would be a lot of fun to see the Mets and the Yankees, yeah, you know, going toe to toe for a player like Lindor. All right, Michael, thanks for doing this. If I am in Yankee Stadium in your seat again, I'll just remember to bring the wipes and make sure I clean up as I leave.
I do trust you, Buster, because you seem very clean.
Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, Sean Sullivan at For You Kevin writes, in September 10th is the 21st anniversary of Pedro Martinez's masterpiece in Yankee Stadium, and as a Sox fan, my favorite gamer Buster's ever written, he included the link, was nice enough to pass that along, but he asks, have you ever seen a better pitching performance in person?
Nope, the greatest one ever. He was unbelievable. And remember, that was against a team that the previous year had won 125 games with a team that wound up winning 4 championships in 5 years and had all-stars up and down the lineup. And as I wrote in the piece, to look at the faces of the Yankees after that game, after he had 17 strikeouts and no walks, and they only allowed one runner on base, and that was a home run by Chili Davis in the last year of his career, it was like they had seen a ghost. That group of players had not been dominated in that way, and I don't think we're ever dominated in that way that Pedro did that night.
Very cool. Last one for today, Thomas Kennedy at Game 686 writes, and I know Tatis has the edge for MVP, but what about the season Michael Conforto is putting together for the Mets? He's hitting consistently, fielding well, and is in the MVP conversation. I like this, hey, what about this guy for MVP outside of Fernando Tatis thing that's boiled up here in the Bleacher Tweets? What do you think?
I know. At this point, we're talking about who's going to be on the number 2 through 10 slots on the ballot. Because Tatis is absolutely running away. And the only way that he would lose the award at this point would be if he were to not be able to play sideline for whatever reason from here forward, and somebody came in and just crushed it down the stretch. Because that's how big his advantage is in a lot of the statistics. Michael Conforto is going to be in the top 10 in the MVP voting, hitting .340, 8 homers, 27 RBI. I actually had it on my list to talk to Carl about him. After that great catch last night, he's having a terrific season.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Shout out to our guy Reggie at BaseballNerd07 for sending along that clip of Tim Kirkshen and Ravi cracking up about the O's Rangers 30 run game. So good stuff there. Subscribe to, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Ravi, to Michael, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.